So let's start our third and final hour. We are live in Southern California. I'm Jim Rome. In case you missed it, we had Nevada head basketball coach Eric Musselman in hour number one. I had Jayon Brown in studio, a Tennessee Titans linebacker in hour number two. Coming up later on this hour, Carolina Panthers quarterback Kyle Allen will join me right here in studio. So in the meantime, our phone lines are open. Very clearly, it is smack off season. I just gave away a golden ticket to Dan in Denver. He's got one. Cal's got one. And going back to last summer, Jeff in Southfield got one. Zion Williamson went down last night. I talked about that game going in. And I talked about yesterday at great length how important that game was. And why that game was so important was that that was Zion's one and only game against North Carolina at Cameron Indoor. And that, sure, he was going to get another shot to play North Carolina in their building, but it's a totally different environment. A much bigger building, a lot more fans there. There was going to be something really unique about Zion playing North Carolina in Cameron Indoor. And then we saw what happened, right, Alvin? Less than 1 minute into the game, he went down when he blew out one of his kicks.
This is against one of the best rebounding teams in the country in North Carolina.
Zion went down. Looked like he hyperextended his leg. He is down, slipped, perhaps some perspiration on the floor, and this place got quiet awfully quickly.
And his leg went out from underneath him. He grabbed the back of his leg. He's walking off under his own power. And, you know, you get to see a guy, you watch this guy, and you think he's Superman, and that he doesn't get injured.
He got injured, and it could have been a lot worse. But he went down extremely awkwardly, and it got really quiet in that building, understandably so. So he goes down last night, and it was a reminder of something that I talked about on the show yesterday, that it was going to cost a lot of money to get into that game last night. A lot of cash was being thrown around, and none of it was going to the guy that everybody was coming to see. And the moment his shoe blew out, it all became very real very quickly. Because there is something horribly poetic about a guy getting injured by a shoe that he's contractually obligated to wear, but not compensated for. So if you want to sum up the bizarreness of college athletics in one image, it was that. The greatest player in how many years getting hurt because he was connected or contracted to shoes that in a few months he'd be paid seven figures to wear, but last night was paid nothing. Think about that for a minute. In a few months, he'll get seven figures to wear those shoes. Or maybe not after last night, but probably. But last night he was paid nothing. And he went down and got hurt wearing that shoe. And there's something really weird about people reportedly paying up to 10 grand to get into that building to watch him play. And his compensation is that he gets to attend college for free. Some people were throwing down as much as 10 grand to watch this guy play, and his compensation is free room and board. You can't tell me that you see that injury in that situation with all that money that has been paid for last night and the hundreds of millions at stake in Zion's future and still want to tell me, yeah, but Rome, he gets a free education. As Donovan Mitchell tweeted last night, quote, again, let's remember all the money that went into this game, and these players get none of it. And now Zion gets hurt. Something has to change at NCAA. He wasn't the only one. Denver Nugget Isaiah Thomas tweeted, quote, let these kids go straight out of high school. Too much on the line to be messing with college if you've got a legit chance to turn pro. One injury can change somebody's career. Zion, sit your ass down. LOL. And we will be ready for you in the big boy league. Hashtag looking out for the players. So before the MRI results were even back, the conversation had already started. Regardless of whether that injury meant that Zion was done for the year, the conversation was, should Zion be done for the year? Should he just shut it down right now and get ready for the NBA draft? Or does he have some obligation to his teammates and even to the school to finish what he started? And I'm guessing today there are plenty of TV and radio talk shows full of one guy after another screaming about what Zion should or should not do. Let me say this. I'm not going to tell him not to play. But I would certainly understand. If he did decide that he's going to shut it down, I don't think there can be a single person anywhere who could fault him for that. It's a smart business decision. He's going to be the first pick in the draft. The only thing that he can do between now and then is hurt himself, like he did last night, or hurt his draft stock. Not playing does not show that he's not competitive. It doesn't show that he doesn't love the game of basketball. I mean, you're a liar if you say either one of those things. It shows that he recognizes that the game of basketball is also the business of basketball. And he could be looking at hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of his career. And the, yeah, but you can't put a price on a national title argument is really pretty weird. Because you know what? I think a lot of people probably can put a price on it. And that price is probably worth a lot less than Zion's potential career earnings, which is what is at stake every single time this guy plays for free. And then there's the, yeah, but they get a free education argument. Listen, at its best, it made sense when sports in college were like any other activity in college. When it was something that students did when they weren't in class, when being a member of a sports team was roughly the equivalent of being a member of the Latin Club or the Film Club or the Model United Nations. You know, an activity that you did with your friends for fun, but not a multi-billion dollar business. And again, as I know this, I've done this long enough, I know what a lot of you are saying already without even looking. A lot of you are out there saying, yeah, well, I've got a kid in college. And if getting a free ride is getting called being taken advantage of, where do I sign up? I get it. I'm going through the college search process right now. I understand this. You don't think that I wouldn't love for my kid to get free room and board, get a free education? Hell yes. Be an amazing thing. Except my kid does not generate millions and millions and millions of dollars. Like your kid. If your kid was a member of the debate team, and somehow the debate team was something that people wanted to see, that they put on TV, and the debate team was generating tens of millions of dollars for the school, and celebrities and former presidents were paying thousands to go see the debates, and everybody who was associated with the debate team but wasn't actually debating, was making bank, and your kid wasn't getting anything for it, you might see that differently. And not only that, but every time he or she stepped up to the podium, she risked her future earnings, you'd probably want a piece of that too, right? See, this is the point. College athletics is not the debate club. It hasn't been for a long time. It's a business. It's a huge freaking business. Now, I'm not going to say that Zion has not benefited from being at Duke. He's playing on national TV every time he steps on the floor. He was an Instagram legend before showing up on campus, but now he's on everybody's mind right now. Hey, believe it or not, he might not have been the number one pick in the draft coming out of high school, but what he's done at Duke has changed all that. I understand. He certainly has benefited from his time there. That's not the argument. The argument is that he hasn't been fairly compensated for his time. And he's taken all of this risk and hasn't been compensated for it. Another example. He dodged a bullet last night. But what if he suffered a Kevin Ware or Gordon Hayward injury last night? Duke basketball does not go away, but Zion's career might. And if you want to argue that there is no injury that Zion could have suffered that would prevent him from being the number one pick in the draft, that what happened last night's not going to hurt his draft stock, so he didn't lose anything, that says more about Zion. That says this guy's an outlier. Because most years, if the number one pick in the draft suffers a bad injury in college, he will drop in the draft. Of course, Zion is just that good, and he's just that different. So this notion of amateurism in college is a joke. Just like saying that a free education is fair compensation is a joke. It's time for change. And just saying that, well, it's too hard. It's too complicated to change it. It's not good enough. It's just not good enough. There are plenty of smart people who can figure out ways for that to happen. The obvious example, the Olympic model, where athletes are compensated for their likeness. Or allowing athletes to skip college and turn pro immediately. Or any number of different approaches. But just throwing up your hands and saying, man, it's way too hard. Man, it is so complicated. It's not good enough. It's just not good enough. There was so much money that changed hands last night. Money for people paying to see that guy. And he didn't get any of it. And no, a free education is not fair compensation for the amount of money he brings in. And there was a lot of risk right there. A lot of risk. 1-800-636-8686. Where do you come out? I don't even know why I ask. I know where a lot of you come out, but I did give you my take, so I'll take yours in return. And Rich Michelbus tweets, I have advice for Zion. Shut it down! Signed, Dirk.
Shut it down! Let's go!
If you were out there last night, and I'm sure Zion would say, this has been the greatest year of my life. I've got memories that last a lifetime. I love my teammates. It's a brotherhood. This is absolutely incredible. Yeah, well, that was before his sneaker exploded. And his body went one way and his foot went the other way. And then all of a sudden, you've got to imagine there are tens of millions of dollars flashing right before his eyes. Can anybody really blame this guy for wanting to shut this down right now? I'm not saying he will. He may, in fact, play. And that's fine. That's his decision. But if his decision is to shut it down and get ready for the NBA draft, I would not fault him for a second. And I don't really know why anybody else would either. Except this cat right here has always had a mind of his own. This dude's not giving in. Let's see what he has to say. Bodie in Pearland. Bubba. What's going on, Bodie?
What is up, Bubba?
It's been a minute.
Man, I finally got you on TV. But hell, Bubba, who went down faster, Kane or Zion Williamson? I mean, what the hell's going on? I mean, these are like multi-million-dollar athlete, and one's a multi-million-dollar future athlete. I mean, I ain't never owned a pair of Nikes because I knew they was a piece of junk the first time I tried them. They had no arch support. And back when I used to play, I used to get up in there and do some dunking, but those things were horrible. They was made in China.
Bodie.
But that's
right.
Basically, you know, that's basically it, man. I mean, we got to – I don't blame him. He's got to sit out, in my opinion. But the best athlete I remember is Dominique Wilkins, a human highlight film. Zion Williamson ain't got nothing on him.
Bodie, my man. I love it. Let me respond to some of this, Bodie. All right, so Bodie's going to let's go with it and saying the human highlight film. That Zion's good, but Zion's got nothing on Dominique Wilkins. And one thing, though, Bodie, I mean – Zion is like 270. The human highlight film did some crazy things, but he wasn't that big. He just was not that big. Zion, when Coach K came on the program, I said, you've had some amazing players. Have you ever had a guy like this? And he was careful how he answered the question. He said, I've had some great players. I'm not saying that Zion is the best player, but I will say that Zion is the most unique player. So I'm going to say that I'm not saying that Zion's going to have the NBA career that Dominique Wilkins had, a Hall of Fame career, but I'm going to say that he may very well be that guy. I've never seen anybody like Zion. I've never seen anybody that big, that explosive, that skilled, who's that dominant on both ends of the floor. Like, I can't compare him to anybody. I can't say that, you know, he's Charles Barkley or he's Karl Malone or he's a hybrid of this, that, or the other. That's the whole point. There's never been a guy like this. And Bodie said, yeah, I didn't wear those shoes anyway. There wasn't good arch support. He goes, who went down faster, him or Kane? He meant Kane Velasquez. Well, to answer your question, Kane did. I think Kane lasted 26 seconds, or was it? Let me look it up. The difference is there was somebody punching Kane in the face and kneeing him and trying to choke him out. I can tell you this, neither one of those guys lasted 1 minute. except it was a pair of sneaks that took down Zion. It was one of the division's heaviest punchers that knocked out Kane. Can you blame this guy for shutting it down? You tell me what's a more amazing image. Dominique Wilkins taking off from the free throw line and throwing down a windmill dunk, or Bode getting up and throwing one down?
Well, Bode
dunking is an amazing image.
Well,
Hey, Bubba, I can see it. I'm not doubting you for a second. I bet that did go down. I bet Bode went up, man, like John Starks, offhand, throwing one down on the big man. Bode, you got to produce some video of that. I'll post that. That'll be the best thing ever.
Suck it, man.
Rebel tweets, Jim, if Zion is going to get seven figures for blowing out his shoe, then LaMelo going to blow out too. Sign LaVar Ball. At TFP Will Eat tweets, Zion last night reminded me of that time that Hawk hurt his back and was sprawled out on the floor. Just 1,000 times more athletic. Hawk said the second day after walking into the camera was much worse than the first day. Geo tweets, did you announce the Golden Taco winner yet? Signed Le'Veon Bell. Golden Ticket. Golden ticket, not golden taco.
Because I've got a golden ticket.
Not taco. We're not giving away any tacos. We're giving away golden tickets. There's no such thing as a golden taco. Much less 100 of them. All right, we're coming right back. And when we do, I want to talk about Ricky Williams. He was the guest for Ep 70 of the Jim Rohn Podcast. And showed up great. Just great. I have that for you next. Kyle Allen, Panthers quarterback, will be in studio in the last segment of the show. That's coming up later on this hour. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rohn Show.
You're in a 5-minute break.
So what would you do if you're a Zion Williamson, knowing the diagnosis is what it is? Johnny Scab says, Jimmy, two words, Operation Shutdown, signed Derek Bell. That was an all-time line. That was an all-time line. Hey, man, it's Operation Shutdown. All right, so here's a question that probably everybody's got a little bit of a different answer to. So a little name association, word association. If I hit you with this name, what's the first thing that pops into your head? Ricky Williams. So what do you think? Do you think football? Do you think Miami? Do you think pot? Do you think failed drug tests? Do you think suspensions? Do you think early retirement? Do you think dreadlocks? Do you think the magazine cover with the wedding dress? Do you think Heisman? Do you think UT? Do you think CFL? Do you think yoga? Do you think Celebrity Big Brother? I mean, Ricky would tell you himself that he knows he's got a different image to almost everybody that's followed his career, both on and off the field. And this, to me, is what makes him so compelling and somebody I couldn't wait to talk to on the podcast. So I finally ran him down yesterday. And right now, episode 70 of the Jim Rohn Podcast with Ricky Williams is live. It's waiting for you to go give it a spin wherever you get your podcast from. And this is an episode I cannot recommend enough. We covered so much ground. We talked about his second life after football, his 30 days in the Celebrity Big Brother house, his favorite NFL coach, and I think that will surprise you, his relationship with Bill Parcells, that might surprise you, his early retirement in 2004, where he went and took some time to find himself, his meditation practices, and why being diagnosed with social anxiety was actually, quote, a wonderful thing. We also talked about how his NFL career started. And I said to him at one point, looking back, Rick, what's more bizarre to you right now? Mike Ditka trading the entire Saints draft to get you, or you slipping into a wedding dress for a photo shoot after that draft?
Trading away the entire draft. I mean, I was a really good college football player, but you know, I think it was just hard for everyone to really make sense of that in real life. And I think it was an amazing gesture and, you know, something that, you know, I'll probably be remembered for a long time. But it was too much for the organization, for the team, for his coaching career, for my time in New Orleans to overcome. And it wasn't until, you know, I was shipped away to Miami that the Saints could move past it and move towards their first Super Bowl. And I could move on and get my career going.
And then the wedding dress, is that one you'd like to have back, or maybe is that one you would do again?
I would do it again. I was young and I was naive, and the truth is I didn't think twice about it. I thought it would be funny, and it was like Halloween. And I remember, you know, landing in La Crosse, Wisconsin for training camp, and, you know, all the reporters were standing outside the plane with the magazine in their hand, and it was a big deal. I would do it over in the sense that it wasn't fun to start my NFL career with so much controversy. But as far as the statement it made, I don't regret that. Just the timing of it it just made it more stressful starting my NFL career.
This is why I do that podcast. More than a half hour of that kind of conversation. That is so good. I mean, that is so thoughtful. When he talked about the Saints, he said, you know what? It was too much. It was too much for all of us. It was too much for the team. It was too much for Ditka's career. It was too much for me. It was just too much to overcome. And I had to go to Miami for all of us to get beyond that. And the thing about the wedding dress, he goes, yeah, man, I'm just having fun. It was like Halloween. And I could see where he was probably like, why is everybody freaking out? It's just kind of a fun thing to do. So that was just the beginning of one of the more controversial NFL careers, because Ricky would go on and he'd fail multiple drug tests for weed. He'd retire early. He'd come back, fail another test, get suspended, go to the CFL before coming back again. And the entire saga got him labeled, of course, as a pothead who picked drugs over football, which was not the case, right? Not at all. We talked about that too. But I wanted to get his take on Daryl Strawberry recently saying that marijuana is a gateway drug and that it led to all the problems he had in his life. And I wanted to see where Ricky came out on that, because if anybody could speak to it, it's Ricky.
I like to quote Gautama Buddha, and he said, everything can be medicine if used at the right time and the right place, and anything can be poison if used at the wrong time or the wrong place. And that's why I think education is so important. If you're determined to escape the difficulty or the pain or some situations in your life, anything you use is going to be a gateway drug, because something's going to work to help you escape, and then that's not going to work anymore, and then you have to advance to something else. What I say to people, and you know, they look at me sideways, but I think if someone is going to truly go down the road of using cannabis with THC in it, that they need to have some kind of meditation practice, because it's very powerful. I mean, when you activate altered states, you start having these different kinds of experiences. And if you don't have any context to use these experiences, then essentially you're just using it to escape. But the whole idea of a positive type of escape that you can get from cannabis is you stop hanging on to the details and the things that have you all tied up, and you allow your mind to relax and get some inspiration that you can, so you can come back and deal with your problems. If you're using it to escape your problems, then it's for sure a gateway drug.
Ricky Williams. That's a pretty thoughtful response from a guy who's very mindful. A guy who has a cannabis wellness business, telling me that weed can be a gateway drug if it's used incorrectly or used for the wrong reasons. And we had some fun at the end of the conversation. I asked him, I ran down a list of quarterbacks that he played alongside or behind. And I asked him if, in fact, Ronnie Brown was the best quarterback that he played with in Miami. And that dovetailed perfectly into Ricky's favorite moment of his entire NFL career. Hey, Ricky, I don't know. I'm looking at the guys you played quarterback with. I'm not looking to be derogatory in any way, but in your time, and I know you loved your time with the Dolphins, but you lined up behind the likes of Jay Fiedler, Ray Lucas, Brian Greasy, Sage Rosenfels, Gus Frerotte, Trent Green, Cleo Lemon, John Beck, Chad Pennington, Chad Henne, Tyler Thigpen. I mean, there's some good dudes and some good players there, and I respect anybody who's got the heart and the desire and the courage to do that. But was Ronnie the best guy that you ever lined up under center with?
Yeah, for my career at that point in my career, by far, yeah. What we were able to do, you know, in 08, 07, 08, and 09, it was magical. And I think, you know, we revived both of our careers, and it was fun. It was fun doing the things that we did those years.
You and Ronnie Brown were great. What was it like continually demoralize Bill Belichick with that Wildcat? Like, the smartest defensive guy ever just could not figure that out early on.
That's probably probably my greatest experience in the NFL, just watching, you know, an organization, a team, a head coach, a defense that's so always so prepared, to watch them unprepared and just fall apart and to whoop up on them in Foxborough. What a great day that was.
Ricky Williams, what a great podcast that was. Pat's haters got to love that. Ricky's favorite moment ever was the Ronnie Brown game in New England when he rushed for four touchdowns and threw for another one out of the Wildcat formation against a befuddled Bill Belichick. Make sure you check out the entire conversation because it's worth it. Ricky is one of a kind. He showed up huge on this episode. Really thoughtful, really mindful, extremely reflective. I'm so glad that he and I got caught up and got to chop it up. And you should too. It's free. It's premium. All you have to do is subscribe and then it will find you every single week. That's episode 70. We've had 70 of those. And my guy, we're going to have our first repeat, our first return guest. My man Kevin Frazier from Entertainment Tonight is going to break down the Oscars. And you know, Kevin and I will talk sports. That's on Podcast Tuesday of next week. But Ricky Williams was tremendous. Hey, Rome, the only thing Bodie is dunking is possum nuggets into barbecue sauce. Signed Jason in Dayton. Possum nuggets. All right, welcome back. One last segment. And when we do, Carolina Panthers quarterback Kyle Allen's got an amazing story. He'll join me in studio. That's coming up next. First up, I've got a bottom of the hour sports update. Here's the very latest for you. Hate to come back, man. We were having a great conversation. All right, welcome back. We are coming in for our last segment. We are live in Southern California. I've got a guy who's got an amazing story. He's a quarterback with the Carolina Panthers. He passed for 228 yards and two touchdowns. He rushed for another TD in his first career start in Week 17. He threw for more than 8,000 yards and 86 touchdowns in high school. He was undrafted out of the University of Houston last year. But as I mentioned, an amazing story. He joins me in studio. Kyle Allen is my guest. Kyle, really good to see you. How you doing?
Dude, I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me out today.
It is good to have you on. As I mentioned, you had an amazing journey, which I want to get into. But first off, what's going on in the offseason? How's it treating you?
Dude, it's been great. I mean, this first offseason as a rookie, so it's the first time where I have literally 3 months to just hang out and focus on myself. So we hung out in Arizona for a little while, just moved out here a couple weeks ago, and just been training.
All right, so when you talk about Arizona, let's go back a little bit. As I mentioned off the top, you had an insane career at Desert Mountain High School in Scottsdale, a career that included throwing passes to Cade Warner, the son of Kurt Warner. I know you've spent some time around Kurt. So as one quarterback talking to another, what was that like? Where did you pick up from him?
It's funny, I actually never played with Cade. He was the year after me.
Oh, no kidding.
But Kurt was always around, so Kurt knew Cade was going to come when he was a freshman, so Kurt would always spend time with me and our offensive coordinator. And when you spend time with Kurt in his house, he'll come in and he'll sit down for 4 hours straight and he'll just talk football.
Wow.
And he won't shut up. And I mean, it's incredible. I mean, he's got a great football mind, and he's like, I compare him to dudes like Rivers, who is just so passionate about the game that they just want to give back. It's incredible.
Now, Kurt, I mean, I've known him since when he first came up in the NFL, and I've had conversations with him. You're right. I mean, the guy's like, he's amazing just to talk to.
Yeah.
When you talk to him, he's obviously, and plus he's such an amazing guy, he's not talking down to you either. So when you talk football, quarterback to quarterback, what kind of things did you talk about?
It's peer-to-peer, man. We're talking scheme. We're talking mechanics, footwork. It's everything. And he just wants to give back. You know, he's done so much. He grinded it out from playing in NFL Europe, bagging groceries, to being NFL MVP. And he just wants to give back, and he sees it in his kids. He sees it in the kids at the high school, too.
Kyle Allen joins me in studio. Now, when I mentioned your journey, you were regarded as the number one quarterback in the country. Mm-hmm. So you go to Texas A&M, and the plan was you're going to battle for the starting job after Johnny Manziel left. Mm-hmm. At that point in your career, what was life like?
Life was insane, man. I mean, I came from Arizona high school football, where it wasn't big. We had 2,000 people at our games, tops. And then you come to Texas A&M, where they have 110,000 people at every single game. Insane, right? Insane. So it was an adjustment period, especially that first season. And, you know, I just came in and I just wanted to grind it out. And I graduated high school early, so I was there in January. And my main focus was, I want to grind it out. I want to win the starting job, win games for this team, and somehow make it to the NFL.
All right, so you get the starting job in 2014. You beat out Kyler Murray for the starting job in 2015. The team gets off to a 5-0 start, and then after a couple of tough losses to Alabama and Ole Miss, you get benched. Now, at that time, you're young, but you're playing. You're having a lot of success. You only know success What was that experience like?
It's exactly like you said. You know, only no success, especially coming from high school and then winning those first five games. And so I think that taught me a lot about adversity and how you're going to react to it and how you handle it. And I think that your failures are your biggest successes because you're going to learn from them or you're not. And so I think that was a good time for me, especially in those two games and then finishing out that season, just how I'm going to handle adversity going through in the future and how I'm going to have this help me for hopefully my NFL future career.
Instead of break you, Carolina Panthers quarterback Kyle Allen joins me in studio. So then you make the decision to transfer to Houston, and then after last season you declare for the NFL draft. Now you had a year of eligibility left. This is a big move, right? Mm-hmm. This is a bold move because you're betting on yourself and you know there's a risk that you might go undrafted. What went into that decision and how did it feel to take that step?
There was a lot that went into that decision. It's like you said, I came into that decision knowing that I might go undrafted. But for me, the situation at Houston was I played three games, we went 2-1, and the coach decided to go a different way. And so I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I really think that I can help an NFL team this next upcoming year. I feel like I can come in, I can produce, I can help guys off the field, I can help guys in the meeting room. And I really just, like you said, I wanted to bet on myself in my talent and my mental abilities. And so really when it came down to it, it was just not many people had belief in me, but I had belief in myself and my family had belief in me. So I said, screw it, let's do it.
Kyle, yeah, Kyle, what's that like? I mean, it's not always easy to believe in yourself when others are not believing in you. And you just said it, not a lot of people believed in you. How did you maintain a steadfast belief in yourself when others around you were not telling you, like, man, this might not be the best idea?
Yeah, and it's just faith. It's just faith and confidence in yourself. And so that's always been a trademark of who I am, and I wanted to keep that going. And I just knew when I was making that decision in December or January or whatever it was that I had faith in myself, I had confidence in myself, so why not?
All right, so you signed with Carolina as a free agent. Mm-hmm. As you were saying at the time, you bet on yourself, you wanted that chance. They waive you, and then you sign on to the practice squad. What was it like to be on the practice squad?
Dude, so they waived me after... So I played in the preseason, and I played the second half of the last game. That was the only reps I got in the preseason. So they waived me and signed me to the practice squad week one. And so I buy a car... I'm like, cool, I'm going to buy a car. I bought like a used Ford Escape. I had a lease on an apartment. 5 days later, they cut me.
Wow.
Send me back home. So I drove 30 hours back to Arizona, sat there for 7 weeks, re-signed me to practice squad week 8 or 9, I think. And then, I mean, I just wanted to grind. My whole goal there was, like I said, I wanted to make an impact on the team no matter how I did, whether I was on the field or in the meeting rooms and practice, whatever. And so when I got back there, that was my main goal. I just wanted to make an impact somehow.
We're talking to Kyle Allen. He joins me in studio. So Cam Newton was battling a shoulder injury. When I talked to Christian McCaffrey at Super Bowl, he was talking about the pain that Cam was in. Man, how tough Cam was. What did you make the way he handled his situation?
If you were there every day and saw how Cam attacked his rehab, you saw how he came to every meeting. I mean, he was there from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. every night. I mean, he was attacking it. And
like literally 5 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah, he would go up to 5 a.m. and do a spin class and get his cardio in, and then he would be up there meeting for 10 p.m. I mean, I've never been around a dude that was that dedicated. And so when people see his game on Sundays, it didn't reflect the way he was working throughout the week. And so I just really felt for him, man. I tried to do everything I could to help him get ready for Sundays. And I hopefully the surgery is going to help him. Hopefully he's going to come back this year, because I really think he's an underrated player in this league. Even though he won MVP a couple years ago, I think he gets disrespected more than he should be respected. And so hopefully he comes back this year and it's going to be even better.
All right, so the decision's made that he's not going to play the last two games. Taylor Heinicke starts week 16. He gets banged around a little bit. You make your NFL debut in that game. So never mind, I'm just here to help. You're in the NFL now playing. What do you remember about entering that game for the first time in the NFL?
Yeah. Well, I remember that they didn't put Cam on IR, but they benched, or not benched him, but they sat him because of his shoulder. And so I remember that Monday, I'd be like, oh, I get to suit up for my first NFL game. I could put the pads on. That's what's up. Then second quarter.
That's what's up.
Taylor goes down, and everything's going through my mind. But
now you're on the field. That's what's up.
On the field. Exactly. But the thing that comes back to me is it's just football. So play within the play. Do what you got to do. Make your reads and get the ball out quick. And that's all I thought. And so just try to do whatever I could to help the team win.
All right, so then for week 17, you're named the starter. So, dude, like, you literally were on a couch a few weeks earlier waiting for a team to call you, and now you're starting in the NFL as a rookie. I know the confidence is there, but were you nervous? Were you excited? What was the mindset?
There's no doubt. I mean, there was nerves throughout the week, for sure. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday during practice and everything. But when it came time to game time on Sunday, I just kind of go back to who I am as a person and who I am as a player. It's about confidence. It's about playing within the system. No, doing your job. And I mean, I don't have to make all the plays. It's 11 people on that offense. So I just want to go out there and execute, take it one play at a time. And I really wanted to get a win for the team after that seven-game skid we went on, or however many it was.
And hey, listen, I know there's 11 guys on a side, and you don't have to do it all by yourself, but you got to know the offense, all right? So when you're on the practice squad, you've learned everybody else's offense. How did you learn this offense in addition to everybody else's offense?
Well, that's what it's about. You got to take those mental reps every single day. And so when I'm playing Drew Brees, I'm playing Jameis Winston every day, I'm also sitting back and watching Cam. I'm also sitting back in meetings thinking about what's he going through his reads, how is he going to do this play, and all that stuff. And so the mental reps has been so important for me for the last year.
Kyle Allen joins me in studio for a few more moments. He's going to close the show. You go up against the Saints. You throw for a couple of touchdowns. You run for another touchdown. You win. What did that feel like? Given where you started at the top, the journey, the battle, the grind, you go into the NFL and you beat the Saints. What did that feel like?
Man, it's incredible, especially with the way the whole year had went from the lows and the highs to getting cut, going back to Arizona for 7 weeks. I mean, it just kind of felt like the whole culmination at the end of the year. And I think it was a good launching point for this next year and what I'm trying to get done this year, too.
All right, so you're out here and you're getting your rep in, or you're working, I should say. You're working with Jordan Palmer, mm-hmm. who's extremely well-respected. Mm-hmm. What kind of things are you working on, and what makes him so unique as an instructor?
I think that he's just been around so many great quarterbacks, and he has it from every single perspective, because he has his brother, Carson Palmer, who's the Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick, and then he has it from him, his perspective, where he went sixth round, played 8 years in the league as a backup, and bounced around. So he has it from the whole range. And so when you work with him, it's a lot of mechanical stuff, it's a lot of throwing motion stuff, but it's a lot of off-the-field stuff, because he was a backup who he made his living off of, how am I going to help the starter win this game? How am I going to get him to see this blitz earlier? And so his mental side of the game is far and above a lot of people.
I was just going to say, I mean, I guarantee I know he's working on the mechanics of the position, but mentally, what are the types of things you talk about? Like, what's he trying to put in your head?
Yeah, I mean, it's just different stuff every day. It's the board work. There's the mentality stuff we talk about confidence, about how you interact with the players in the locker room.
I don't think you need a lot of work on that. Yeah. I think you're all right with that.
Yeah, you can always work on that, but yeah, I agree. But yeah, there's that stuff, and then there's also obviously like the mental side of the game, from the blitzes, from the coverages, from the fronts, and everything like that.
So am I correct in thinking that you also picked up a custom bird scooter because your scooter to and from practice in Charlotte?
Yes.
Yeah. What are you using right now? Like, how is the scooter life?
So remember, I bought that car and I drove back home.
Right.
Well, I wasn't going to drive another 30 hours back out there. And so every day in the morning, I would wake up and walk around and try and find a bird scooter and ride to work every day.
Right. So how is that scooter life?
It's amazing.
It's good, right?
It's the life.
It's good, man. So what about the car? Is the car, where is it?
Car's
the
here.
Folks, so you have it here now.
Well, the car's here now. Yeah. I gotta come all the way up to Costa Mesa.
All right. See, dude,
the thing is, man,
like, so when you roll that car, you know how people can be, man, especially in this town. It's a big car town. Like, when you roll out in that car right now, you're getting a lot of looks, or you're not getting any looks at all?
In the Ford Escape?
Yes.
I'm getting no looks in the Ford Escape. I'm flying by everybody in the Ford Escape.
That's what I'm saying,
no
man.
Looks coming at me.
Hey, so how do you feel about that? Like, do you get that? Do you understand that? Or are you kind of looking down on this town like, man, this is weak. This
no,
is plastic.
I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I'm sliding under the radar. Everyone else can come up here.
I like it. All right. So you threw for more than 8,000 yards in high school, living that life, the scooter life, but grinding on the grind. Kyle, great job, man. Really nice to have you here in studio.
Yeah.
Nice to visit with you. Let's be sure we do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again, man. Appreciate you having
great
me.
Great job. Well done, man. Appreciate you. All right, that's a good day here in the jungle. And that's how you close the show. You got to have presence to close the show like that. Now, you might not be able to get a new car with your tax refund, but you can make your car feel like it's brand new. All it needs is a great paint job. Come to Maaco. Get a dream paint job during their tax season sales event. And that's it for a Thursday. If you didn't get through, give it a shot tomorrow. My thanks to Eric Musselman. He's the head coach at Nevada. We had Jayon Brown, Tennessee Titans linebacker. He was in studio. That's Kyle Allen. He's getting his workout here in Southern California. See you tomorrow. Remember, cheesy as it sounds, TGIF, the grind does include Friday. Finish strong. Get that thing hard, and we will see you right back here tomorrow. We're out.